Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. This week's program is sponsored by Davis Hemp Farms. You can find more information at davishempfarms.com. On this week's program, we'll talk with Jeremy Kletke. Jeremy is with Davis Hemp Farms, and we'll find out what they're all about, and we'll also talk about some interesting topics involving hemp farming and distribution, so stay tuned for that. We'll also hear again from Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin will keep us updated and informed on what's going on in the Indiana legislature, but first, let's get things started with Midwest Hemp Council Executive Director Jamie Campbell Petty. Jamie, it's been a while since we've heard from you, but it's great to have you back on the program.
Yeah. Hi, Jason. Thanks for squeezing me in today.
Oh, not a problem. Not a problem at all. Now, you just got back from NOCO, and that's the seventh annual NOCO. Tell us what NOCO is all about and why that's important for us.
So it's a great gathering of hemp industry leaders and interested parties. Morris Beagle has led that event for 7 years. And of course, last year we weren't in person. So it was great to get back this year. And I have to say, amazingly, this is the first year I've been able to go. So I really enjoyed spending time with people I've known for years, people that have been in the hemp industry for decades. And we had a lot of Midwest Hemp Council members on panels, discussions, having booths, and a lot of our partners. So it was a great kickoff to post-COVID or transition COVID events. And Morris and his team did an amazing job with COVID compliance. It was incredible how well they were to do it.
And where was this?
That was at Denver. It was in Denver at the Stockyards.
Oh, okay. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, it's great to be able to look forward and know that we can finally start getting back together again this year.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of which, that's one reason I wanted to talk to you, Jason, because we've got a lot of stuff coming up.
Well, I know that the next event coming up, the CBD Expo Midwest. Tell us about that, where it's at, how people can get information on that.
Sure. So you can go to our website for a link or our social media. And we are working with them to build out some panels. We will have Justin Swanson, Austin Rodas, Greg Krueger, Nicole Anderson. Several people are going to be engaged with that. And we're also talking to Kia at Adams Testing and Ryan at KCA Labs to join us. So we're glad to be able to step in. That's at the Marriott East on Friday, April 9th and Saturday, April 10th. Midwest Hemp Council will have a booth there, so come out. A lot of our members are going to staff that. And also, if you are a Midwest Hemp Council member, if you saw yesterday's newsletter and or if you go to the website, as a Midwest Hemp Council member, you are entitled to a free ticket to the conference and expo. And instructions are in yesterday's newsletter, and you can watch for those on the website or the member portal of the website.
Excellent. And again, that's coming up here the next couple weeks, April 9th and 10th. And then, you know, it's been a long time since I've been to a soiree, but we've got one coming up here on May 13th. Tell us about that.
We do. And again, excited. I know, Jason, you were able to join us in 2019 when we had our event at the Indiana Historical Society. Mm-hmm. So we'll be doing that again on May 13th. Details have gone out in the newsletter and they're on our website as well. Should I say some details? We haven't launched everything yet. But we will be launching, you know, giving more details. It'll be May 13th at the Indiana Historical Society. For Midwest Hemp Council members, we will have our annual business meeting first, and I believe that's going to be around 5 o'clock, and then we will open the doors to the public. Admission will be $50 for non-Midwest Hemp Council members, and admission for members will be $25. And we plan to have some it'll be a cash bar. But we'll have some speakers there, and we are looking for sponsors if anybody's interested in sponsoring. We're looking forward to a really nice evening of networking and updating many on the legislation and regulatory environment.
Well, we've been talking for a year now about how important it is to network and be able to get face-to-face with folks and how much that does help business in general, but certainly the hemp industry folks need to be able to get together and talk. So now we've got two opportunities to do that, the CBD Expo Midwest in April, the spring soiree in May. Also, the another big thing that's going on that has been going on, the Policy Circle every second Tuesday.
It is, and that's for our Policy Circle members. If you go to the website and check out membership, we have two membership levels, Policy Circle, and that's currently $300 a year. We have Hemp Supporter for $100. But as Policy Circle, you get your logo on the member page, you get a direct line for input into policy and regulation, and primarily through this second Tuesday of the month Policy Circle meeting. And in addition, you know, we encourage everyone, even if you're not prepared to join us, which we hope you are, there is a link on the website where you can join and receive our newsletter, which is still, it's a great opportunity to keep up to date. A newsletter goes out every Tuesday. And in that newsletter, you're going to be able to find out who is coming up on the Thursday podcast with you, Jason.
There we go.
Yeah.
Big news.
Yeah. So the podcast has been going every Thursday. We are in search of podcast sponsorship. And anyone who's interested in that can reach out to myself or Brandy. There are quite a few. I believe we've got June and July open, but what we'd really like to do is find someone to sponsor us just through the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of benefits that go along with that, let alone making sure that we continue to get factual reporting out and meeting of all the members and industry leaders.
There we go. And it's important to hear me every week.
Absolutely. We need to hear your voice every week.
Well, there we go. Okay. So, yeah, sponsorship is available. Certainly jump on that if you can. Now, also coming up in July, another opportunity to get together. I love the field days, the hemp field days, and we've got one coming up in July.
We do. And unfortunately, we don't have a set date yet. We need to figure out when everybody gets to get in the field and plant, and we're going to work on it. We're actually working with members with not only within the region, but members and partners in Colorado and Oregon and California. We are looking at possibly hosting some unique and specialized harvesting equipment here, and we will have a field opportunity to watch harvesting. We're going to have a business forum where people can not only learn about the fiber itself, but about the supply chain and where we're headed with supply chain and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that will come out. We'll unroll all that information, but please stay tuned because we anticipate mid to late July for that event.
Excellent. Excellent. It'd be great to get outdoors and see what's going on there. Now, the other event that I really enjoyed from a couple of years ago, I believe it was the first one. So I don't know if this is the second one, the Hemp at the Crossroads for 2021. This is the second one, correct?
It is. Unfortunately, we had to cancel 2019, mm-hmm. but we are fired up. I'm really getting excited. We were able to extend our time by a half a day. Again, we're looking for sponsors. Booths for sale are for sale now. Be sure and log into the website as a member so you can enjoy the member discounts, whether it's for registration, sponsorship, or booth space. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we have extended the early bird discounts until September 1st.
All right. And this is a December 1st through 3rd event.
It is. Yep. December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Very excited. It's going to be at the Embassy Suite Hotel and Conference Center in Plainfield. So for all of our members who are going to be flying in or driving in, we're going to be right near the airport. A lot of restaurants, hotels, just excited about what we're going to be able to all be back together and do in December.
And there was a ton of people that showed up for the first one. So again, since this is pushed back to December, all the COVID things, all that problem should be well behind us. Everybody should be able to get together and certainly have a good time for that. And that'll kind of round out our year for events. And we'll certainly keep everybody updated and keep Jamie on here. But and we're going to get Justin Swanson on here. We hope Justin's got some time to join us here in a little bit, Jamie. And I'm sure he'll be talking about House Bill 1224, but I know you wanted to make a comment about that as well.
I did. It's we have been sending out, especially to our members, I have sent out targeted emails that include suggested language guidelines, providing contact information. We really need to be reaching out between now and Friday morning, the earlier on Thursday that you can hear this and get to that, that's great. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't seen my emails, please get to them. And even if you're placing calls and emails over the weekend, you know, don't let a timeline stop you. But I do encourage everyone to do it as soon as possible. It took me literally 5 minutes to call every senator on the committee and about 10 minutes to email everyone. So it won't take long. And it's, we need your voice. We need your support so that we can get this bill out of the committee and onto the Senate floor.
And when you
and that's Indiana specific.
Indiana specific. And when you make that phone call, you're not talking specifically to the lawmaker, but how, when you say you made all those in 5 minutes, so if somebody wants to pick up the phone and make that phone call, who are they talking to? Who's on that other end, and what are they now again they need to look in the email and that sort of thing to find out what to say, but who are they actually talking to? Is that a voicemail or is that a person, or how does that work? Do you know?
I commonly receive a voicemail, and when I do that, I leave my name, I carefully leave my name, my phone number, and that I am requesting their support and that I'm available for questions. Simple as that. And it is normally a voicemail. Otherwise, you will get the legislative assistant. And we have provided the legislative assistant's name for you for each of the senators on this committee. So you have a phone number, an email, and names and points of contact. It's all right there. If you did not receive an email, please reach out to me at jamie@midwestcouncil.net, and I will ensure that you receive the email that lays out some suggested language, bullet points, and the contact information.
There we go. Jamie, anything else before we let you go?
I think that's it, Jason, and I want to thank you for letting me jump on here today. And we do, in addition to the events we talk, we hope to be adding in some more in-person networking. And as soon as that happens, I'll come back and let you know. And look forward to seeing everybody May 13th.
Excellent. Once again, Jamie Campbell Petty, Executive Director of the Midwest Hemp Council. Jamie, like I said, it's been a while since we heard from you, but it's always great when we do, so we certainly do appreciate it.
Take care, Jason.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. All right, next we turn our attention to Justin Swanson. Justin is the Midwest Hemp Council President. He also keeps us updated and informed on what's going on in the Indiana legislature. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm good, Jason. I'm excited to give some updates here. It's April 1st, so, you know, it's always exciting for us. On the lobbyist side, I'm sure the legislators feel the same way as we're coming up on the end of session. So we will be out. Legislature will be done. They're aiming to try to get done on April 21st.
That's going to be early this year, isn't it?
Yeah, so traditionally during the budget year like we have this year, they have to be out by April 29th. But we've seen years past. I mean, there's been a trend to try to get out early. And so really what kind of the biggest thing in the legislature right now outside of hemp, believe it or not, there's other things going on there.
You don't say.
Really, the Senate is getting ready to, they just had their budget hearing on the House's proposed budget, and they'll come back next week with their, basically with an amendment that's going to highlight their spending priorities for the state.
Didn't see my name in there anywhere, did you?
Not yet. No, oh, still working
maybe
on
next
that.
Next year. Okay. Go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt you there.
And then basically what's going to happen is the Senate and the House leaders will get together and try to compromise on how to spend the money. Mm-hmm. So that's really the biggest bill out there. And then kind of what all the legislators are waiting on to have those discussions and negotiations is the state's April revenue forecast. So it's kind of projecting what kind of revenue we'll have for the next 2 years. And that's how legislators kind of know what their what money they have, how much money they have, and where they can place it.
All right. And just a side note, Justin, does a lot of this go on, not necessarily behind closed doors in a nefarious way, but just does a lot of this discussion go on out of the public view, or does this go on in the chambers, in the room where you can sit and listen and hear the debates and things like that? Does it get to that point?
So, the vast majority of this stuff is they always take public testimony, and, you know, you can get online and watch all this stuff. But really the last 2 weeks of session here, when we have this, what's termed, you know, conference committee, when you have legislators negotiating, that is more, you know, legislator to legislator. I don't really like the connotation behind the scenes.
More
of the direct conversations between, you know, a House member and a Senate member trying to figure out, okay, here's my bill. This is what you changed in it. How can we find, you know, where's the common ground here, and what can we both agree on in terms of what this bill should look like?
Right.
So that go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I was just looking at it from the point of view, is it a spectator sport, or is it something where you just wait for results?
It's a little bit of both. You got a lot of bit of hurry up and waiting. And then also, you need to make sure that, if you're a legislator, that your interests or what issues you're working on, make sure they cross the finish line. Cause mm-hmm. towards the end of session here, these guys get grumpy. If they start seeing some no votes up on the screen, they, all might just pile on and kill a bill just because they're in a bad mood. Mm-hmm. It's happened before. So this is kind of the exciting time of session. Because everything's moving fast and legislators are looking for new homes for language that may not have, hit a specific deadline.
Well, one of the things important to us is the hemp flower hearing, and that's coming up this Monday.
That's exactly right. So we have House Bill 1224 up for a hearing in Commerce and Technology. So we're over in the Senate. We passed the House 69-28. So we had a really good majority and a strong showing of support from House members. And on Monday, it's, we're going to be having the same discussions on trying to educate lawmakers on, why it's so important to make sure that our farmers have access to, the whole hemp plant market. Mm-hmm. And this idea of picking and choosing what's legal off the hemp plant has already been answered at the federal level. And really all we're trying to ask for is, allow our farmers, allow our small businesses to be competitive on a national market that's, projected to hit $300-400 million by 2025.
So it sounds like our cup is 2/3 full and 1/3 empty. How do we get that other third to get to the top?
That's a great question. I wish I knew the answer to that right now. Our bill, House Bill 1224, it's only scheduled for testimony. So the committee's not going to take a vote on it on Monday. Now, what makes this really tricky is April 8th, so next Thursday, a week from today, is actually committee deadline. Mm-hmm. So if this bill is not voted on and voted out of committee by Thursday, it'll be dead in the Senate. So we have, we have to impress the committee on Monday on why and show them why it's so important. And then we're going to have to spend the next couple of days of trying to convince the chairman to bring the bill back for a vote to get out of committee.
Yeah, and we just had Jamie Campbell Petty on here talking about that, how important it is for everyone in the next few days to reach out to their lawmakers.
Absolutely, and like I've said from the beginning, this bill will not pass unless these senators and representatives hear from the farmers and the small businesses and the consumers on why access to this market just makes sense.
Yeah, so we certainly don't want folks to just sit back and wait and let everybody else do the work. You need to do it. It only takes a few minutes. Go to the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and you can get information on how to do that. And as you hear from Justin right now, it's very important that that happens.
That's right. So, we're coming up on, the committee deadline next week. Got to get the bill out. If we don't, it's, the saying goes, it's, a bill's not dead until it's dead. So, we may have to explore different vehicle bills to try to put the language in to make it happen. So we have options if it doesn't work, but, we just need a lot of engagement, professional engagement, and giving clear, concrete examples of why this bill is important to you.
All right, Justin, and we'll certainly look forward to getting you back on next week and with the results and hopefully positive results for us.
That's right. So, this time we'll get together next Thursday and give everyone an update on how the hearing went and hopefully have positive news for everybody.
All right. Fantastic. Well, Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin, as always, it's appreciated. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And again, everybody needs to do something this weekend and make it happen, make your voice heard. So on Monday, you can say I did everything I could do to help out.
That's exactly right, Jason. I always appreciate talking to you.
All right. Take care, Justin.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Next, we turn our attention to Jeremy Kletke with Davis Hemp Farms. Jeremy's been on the program before. He was a great interview, and we wanted to bring him back and get an update and kind of revisit with Jeremy and everything they've got going on out there at Davis Farms. Jeremy, how you doing this week?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, our last conversation went great. I'd certainly advise folks to go back and into the archives and find that one, listen to it as well as any of the, just go back to podcast number one and just go ahead and binge all the way through. I know Jeremy's done that a couple times.
You know, I have one of the best interviewers I know.
There we go. So with that compliment, we'll jump right into Jeremy. Tell us about Davis Farms of Oregon, why you guys founded it, how you got into the hemp industry, and then we'll move on from there.
You bet. So, you know, the short, long story is essentially I've been in the cannabis and hemp space for about 30 years. Grew up in Oregon in the West Coast, spent some time in the early 90s working with the cannabis plant out here. Didn't like the potential of persecution and sort of the scrutiny the plant was under. So ended up launching over to Switzerland in the late 90s, had the opportunity to work with the Swiss government producing CBD THC one-to-ones. First time I really got turned on to the fact that this plant has a number of cannabinoids or a number of compounds. We did that for 2 years. After that, the global drug policy sort of impacted the Swiss program. And so I moved from there on to Holland, where I spent a couple of years working in glass houses. From there, I ended up in Czech Republic and then back here in 2007 in Oregon once the medical program started. And we became known as the primary producer of CBD 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 10-to-1, and 20-to-1 ratios. So type 2 plants, for those who are familiar with the cannabis and hemp plant. Mm-hmm. And that gave us quite a launching platform in the medical arena. And again, really just tuned me into the value and power of this plant for human health.
And when did the attention turn to hemp?
So there we go. Just getting to that. Here we move into 2015. And we're already producing these 20-to-1 varieties, and we're supplying these the medical industry in Oregon here, and the hemp bill for CBD production passes. And what we realized is there were not a lot of quality genetics out there. We have these varieties in cannabis that have been primarily coddled and babied indoors. And so how do you introduce field hardiness? And a lot of these also were, as we know now, we're on the edge of compliance. So we have these stringent compliance requirements of 0.3 THC, and a lot of these were going over the top of that. So mm-hmm. the genetics were the issue. Me having the experience breeding cannabis for, you know, a number of years, actually a couple of decades, it made sense for us to start leaning into trying to produce these field stable, hardy 30-to-1 varieties. And so that was where we started into the hemp program.
Okay. And let me ask you this, Jeremy, as somebody that was a pioneer in this, you were involved well before 2014. Where did the original hemp plants, hemp seeds come from that everybody is using right now? I mean, at some point it became legal or actually to experiment there in 2014, then 2018. But where are these clones and these seeds? Where did they originate from in the beginning?
Okay. And that's an interesting question because the gene pool is really small. The CBD producing plants for hemp come from mostly, you know, a handful, maybe 6 or 7 mother varieties. And most of those also were coddled varieties. They're what I call anomalies that survived sort of from the THC industry. Mm-hmm. So non-psychoactive, but had good terpene production and good resin. And those would be varieties like Cherry or The Wife or R4, which is what Charlotte's Web is based off of. So those varieties are, you know, again, limited germplasm, mm-hmm. but germplasm that was here and usually existed in clone-only varieties. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where most of that stuff comes from. In our case, we did something very unique and went out and collected wild American feral varieties to introduce field hardiness into these coddled babies.
And that would lead up to my next question. Was hemp growing wild here in the United States as of 2014? Were they able to get clones or seeds that way?
So, you know, I would say that nobody really looked at that. Yes, in answer to your question, Jason, it was absolutely growing here. It had survived, you know, since 1937 and certainly after the Hemp for Victory effort in World War II and the Korean War. Mm-hmm. And so it was living on the edges of fields. But the irony is, I don't think anybody really looked at that as an option for producing these type 3 plants, these 30-to-1 CBD mm-hmm. producers.
Okay.
Really, the reason that we looked at it, Jason, is just for field hardiness again. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so we're at the point now where you guys are doing the experimentations, the genetics, things like that. You made the jump into the hemp industry. Was that would both feet in, or were you kind of still with the cannabis side and the hemp side? How did you make that determination of that split, or that you were going to put the time into the hemp plant, not knowing that there would be any return whatsoever on this at that time?
No, and I have to, that's a very clear answer to that, Jason, like 100%. both feet in all the way. You know, I'm very CBD oriented. Mm-hmm. From the medical side, of course, we had seen the value to kids with autism and seizure disorder and all of these things. But I come from a time when we recognize the plant is food, fuel, fiber, and medicine. Mm-hmm. So you give me the opportunity to be involved in the hemp industry. That's huge. And so we jumped both feet. I mean, both feet, head, everything in to hemp and went towards producing these 30-to-1 varieties.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, so where did you go from there? You, at that point, you were, again, very early on in the industry, and you guys jumped in. Where did that take you from that point?
Well, and I think this is a story worth telling, because at that time, there just wasn't a pathway. There wasn't a clear picture that you could look at. Hey, this guy's doing that, and this guy's doing this. This is the model, right?
At the time, there was no Midwest Hemp Council to help you along.
There was not. None of this stuff was really happening. Now, granted, there were some grassroots people that were involved in this.
I'm sure it, Jamie was already involved, but I'm not positive when the Midwest Hemp Council was there laying out the roadmap.
Correct. So for breeding in particular, we didn't have any roadmap. And, you know, what we looked at is some of the other approaches that people were doing. But yeah, being in the beginning, the problem was simple. How do you create something that's going to have a good CBD to THC ratio, mm-hmm. is going to stay below that compliance level, mm-hmm. and I think most importantly is going to be able to handle the different challenges that the climate's going to throw at it, mm-hmm. you know.
And you were in Oregon, again, up in the Northwest at this time.
That's correct. So we're actually in a unique part of Oregon. We're in Central Oregon, so it's high desert. We're at 4,280 feet is where our production facility is.
I didn't realize there was desert in Oregon.
Yeah, I know, most people don't.
Wow.
So we have the high desert east of the mountains. Oregon has it all. As you head west to east, it gets drier and drier. The coast is very wet. Then you get the first set of mountains, the Cascades, and everything behind that is sort of a rain shadow. But yes, point is we're kind of in this location, and I've grown up in a region where we have Western Washington and you know, the heavy weather incidents there and high humidity to the heavy frost that we get here. So we were able to kind of look at all the variables that we would have to address. And I'm proud to say, you know, we bred 6 varieties that are all quite unique in their ability to do well in different microclimates and bioregions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now your climate helped out, but also at the time your lawmakers certainly helped out, because Oregon was one of the states leading the charge for legalizing hemp. So that certainly was a benefit for you given your location.
Yeah, no question about it. Oregon has been a pioneer in the space. We were fortunate enough to be leading that. I mean, not getting too far in the weeds, Jason, mm-hmm. and we might've touched on it last time, but we were actually really instrumental in 2016 spring session for creating the bill. Now, granted, we had the 2014 farm bill, and there were people growing hemp for CBD, but it was a slightly gray area. So in 2016 here in Oregon, we were instrumental in the lobby effort to, and matter of fact, it was myself who got the note from Mother to carry legislative counsel for the legislative concept mm-hmm. for CBD production under hemp in the state of Oregon. And I guess what I'd say to you is that's Farm Bureau involved. And it's a little bit of a funny story that we were working on some policy for the medical side and needed some support from the Farm Bureau, you know, to see this as a recognized farm crop. And I went to the head of the Farm Bureau and said, hey, listen, would you support us in some policy work that we have? And the head of the Farm Bureau's answer was, well, how do you feel about CBD as an industrial end use for hemp? And my answer was, well, I don't think it's an industrial end use for hemp. I think it's a medicinal end use. And then he kind of smiled and said, let me ask you that one more time. How do you feel about this? And so that was the spring session in which we actually ratified the bill that made it very clear. It wasn't a gray area. Now it says, look, you can produce CBD, and it is an industrial end use for hemp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and let's stay on that path. You mm-hmm. at that time, you were in very involved, as most of the folks, pioneers have to be, because a lot of the legislative folks had no idea what they were dealing with in hemp. To mm-hmm. them, it was marijuana. So it's taken a lot of education, still takes a lot of education. We're still involved in that in Indiana. I'm sure you still are there in Oregon, as we are throughout the United States. But you guys are also now from that point pushing the total THC compliance. And tell us what that's all about. You're leading the charge for that. Tell us what that's about and where you're at with that and the goal of that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, and, you know, I mean, this is a pivotal moment in history that we're talking about right here, Jason, to take a step back. And in that on March 22nd, the federal law came out. So now we have a standardization across the United States for hemp production. And I've seen a lot of chatter in our industry about this 0.3, threshold being unreasonable and fighting for a higher threshold. And I think we'll get there. But as a pioneer who's been doing this for so many decades, I just want everyone to please take a step back and recognize what's really happened here. We now have a standardization. And if you don't have a standardization in policy, then this stuff can't really get out far. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't have the reach. So now that we have this national standardization, everything's going to start to fast track for hemp. And I don't know how many people are aware, but the European Union recently adopted 0.3 total THC as their compliance requirement. So once that starts to happen, now we have the ability to move forward on a global platform, which is what we need for this plant for food, fuel, fiber, and medicine. So I really want to just say that this is a very monumental moment in history. But back in, into this total T, what's going on here is that a lot of the pilot programs as the states developed, Oregon being one of them, because of the lack of availability of, really high quality compliant genetics, they developed a policy or a pilot program that tested only the Delta 9 variant of the THC. And us being around as long as we have, I happened to watch the development of the reintroduction of the hemp programs in the early 90s for France and Canada. And I watched them hang on this 0.3 number. And my point here is that they spent a few years figuring out where they needed to land on total THC compliance requirements. And the reason they ended up on 0.3, a lot of people don't know, is that they learned that if the plant naturally stays in field and grows again, the THC potency can increase. And so it would, over a couple of years, potentially get as high as this threshold of 1%. So this is all written in the 2014 Farm Bill. And I had the understanding in the 90s of where this all came from. So what we targeted, knowing, Jason, that a breeding program doesn't happen in a year, especially with cannabis and hemp, you're going to have to spend some time stabilizing the work, reducing the hermaphroditic potential. Just to get to commercialization, there are a lot of steps. And so we chose a really unique path. We're probably the only breeder that worked towards creating stable, compliant total THC genetics at 0.3 at full maturity. And this is another one that we're seeing now. The pivot has become to talk about harvesting early to meet compliance. And I think that most farmers, we recognize that you're not going to pull a piece of fruit out of the field early. You're not harvesting your corn early. It's not going to have the same, sugar content and palatability. And the same goes with cannabis or hemp, let alone yield potential. So again, we're one of the only companies that I think targeted this high ratio 30-1, but staying at a 9%, 10%, 11% so of total CBD content so that you're staying compliant. And I would say it made it very difficult for us to compete over the last couple of years with some of the other people that had higher CBD content. Mm-hmm. But we've sold on field hardiness and yield potential and other things, but it's very important, I think, this year for farmers to recognize there's a changing in the guards, just a changing of the rules. And there are very few truly compliant genetics on the market. I think they'll be here. Mm-hmm. I think now that the writing's on the wall, the rest of the breeding companies will start targeting and heading towards this direction. But for right now, it's sort of a transition. Mm-hmm. And I really warn farmers to be cautious.
When you say they're out of compliance, how are they out of compliance in general?
And that if you run them to full maturity, they will go over 0.3 total THC. And a lot of them will crash it. A lot of the genetics out there are 0.6, 0.7 at full maturity. And so you just have something that you're going to end up having to embargo and have destroyed.
All right. And this kind of also goes into or leads into the USDA final rule 322, mm-hmm. pointing to total THC requirements. Were you guys involved with that legislation or how are you involved with that?
Well,
or are you,
Jason,
fighting
I'll
that?
I'll be honest with you. Because of the big push for a higher potency threshold, we've sort of sat back. And I would never, one thing I want everyone on this podcast to understand is this is a nascent, or listening to understand, this is a nascent industry. It's volatile, it's undeveloped, and anything that can help move the industry forward as a whole is something that we're going to focus on. Mm-hmm. Creating a sustainable industry for us to operate in. So mm-hmm. this is never about our selfish desire of trying to maintain a threshold of 0.3 because we kept there. So yeah, because we've targeted that. So Jason, we actually remain wholly quiet. I have a great footprint and a great lobby, you know, support. And we could have gone in. As a matter of fact, I think we're the only company still registered with the Oregon Government Ethics Committee and having our own independent lobbyists. So we certainly have the ability to be heard. But in this case, like, I heard a lot of the chatter and the argument, and I just am, I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I'd love to see the market head to 1%. And I think we are heading there. I think, as a matter of fact, I think we're heading towards a global legalization platform, which changes this for the CBD hemp producers. But to be completely straight with you, Jason, we just remain quiet. Watched what happened. We sat back. We have six varieties that are commercialized that are prepared to go to the Delta 9 compliance requirements. And then we had six commercialized varieties, which are total T. So truthfully, we were able to pivot. I'm just happy, like I said, going back to see standardization. This is really what it comes down to. It's just, a standard is a great starting point. It's a foot in the door.
So with you, again, pushing the or with the 0.3, You're happy with that, and you guys are looking to stay in compliance with that. And you're saying the rest of the industry is trying to go to 1%?
Yeah, and forgive me for not, you know, for just making the assumption that everybody was tapped into this.
Yeah, you have to assume when you talk to me, you got to keep it simple, stupid.
No problem. No problem. And really, I want everybody, I don't want to talk over anybody's head. But yes, that's essentially what's happened is, the USDA released their interim final rule, which let everybody, and this was last year, let everybody know, hey guys, this is what's coming down the pipe. Mm-hmm. We want your comments. Everybody came in and they were, you know, the USDA was overwhelmed with comments. And through that next year, they ended up coming out and developing the policy based on those comments. And they were, in my humble opinion, they were very respectful mm-hmm. with what they've done with creating the new policy. Mm-hmm.
Is there a negative to go to 1% versus 0.3?
I don't think there is. I don't think we're creating an intoxicating product when we do that. And what I would say is, even if we go to 0.6, almost all of the genetics become, you know, relatively compliant. So now the gene pool broadens, the farmer has more selection, and I certainly don't think we're in a position where we're creating an intoxicating product and, you know, we're becoming the scourge or anything.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I wanted to hit on there that you mentioned that I kind of flew past. Each state, they can have their regulations. The country, United States, can have a regulation. Again, 0.3, 1%, whatever they come up with. But you mentioned that the international law or rule of 1%, if how would the international rule or law, however you term that, would the United States go along with that, or would they have to agree to that, and then each state have to agree to that to go up to 0.6 or 1? How would that work? Because we don't typically have many international laws that we would comply with or have to comply with.
No, and I'm with you. And I think really what we're talking about when we talk about global standardization is just not limiting commerce. Right. Not mm-hmm. restricting commerce. Mm-hmm. So when we have a unilateral threshold for THC, now all of a sudden we know that a product grown here can be shipped to there.
So basically, if we keep it at 0.3% in the United States and the rest of the world goes to 1%, their products would not be available, would not be able to be brought into the United States. Correct. Am I on the right path there?
You are on the right path, but more, I think what I was referring to is the opposite, that if they're at mm-hmm. 0.3 and we're at 0.3, now we have the ability to engage in commerce with one another.
Mm-hmm. Because they won't want our 0.3 if they're at 1.
No, they wouldn't, and there's no benefit to it. But I do want to say that what I see happening, and there are a few outliers. So we have some countries like Mexico, I believe. Ecuador has pushed for 1% right now. And when I look at that, I think it's an economic play. I think that they're looking at it from an isolate standpoint, from a single compound standpoint, mm-hmm. and they know that they can produce more CBD isolate off of a plant that gives them a 1% threshold. So it's an economic play in my eyes. However, it falls outside of the global standard. So now the only product that can be shipped out of those countries mm-hmm. is an isolated product. So you can't ship any broad spectrum. You can't ship any flower out because your THC potency is going to be too high.
Right, right. And do you see, as people that are entering the CBD market, again, folks listening to this podcast that have never grown a plant yet, that they want to get involved, is there a good possibility they could be selling their CBD and their hemp internationally? Or are they basically, should they be looking just within the United States borders?
You know, every day the rules are changing and getting more, or opening the doors more to us to do that. And we do see a market developing with CBD flower moving to Europe, with Switzerland being the hub because of the EU requirements, mm-hmm. Limiting them. And so essentially, you know, hemp people are so creative. I have to give them that. And so they've basically created a market that feeds the European Union through Switzerland, where the products will go to Switzerland. They'll be retested in Switzerland on the ground, and then they can be distributed out from Switzerland to the European Union. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, yes, the international potential is increasing daily. And I would imagine that as soon as this harvest of this year, we're going to see new regulatory requirements for export of products from here to the European Union.
Now, Jeremy Kletke. Jeremy is with Davis Farms of Oregon. Jeremy, I guess I should have asked when we first started, how can folks get in touch with you and get more information about what we've been talking about?
Absolutely. And thanks for asking, Jason. We're all about education. We really want to get the message out there. So you can find us at www.davishempfarms.com. There's a ton of media content on there. Obviously, your podcast from last year is on there. This one will be on there. Mm-hmm. And also another unique feature about our website is you can access my calendar on there, and you can schedule a 15-minute meeting with me. Because one of the things that we believe is that as the industry develops, it's important for a farmer to be able to contact breeder. This is a really unique space. The way that we're producing seed is really unique. Historically, a farmer has come to trust and depend and rely on their seed. A seed is a seed, and it's just not so with hemp. So as the industry develops and the genetics improve and certifications come online, I mean, once we all have a blue tag certification, we get to a place farmers can trust. But I'm accessible, and I want to be accessible, so I definitely want the individuals out there to understand that.
And also, you guys offer a webinar series. We want to talk about that. Is that the first one's coming up here on April 3rd?
Mm-hmm. And thanks for bringing it up. So this is our second year of doing our educational webinar series. It's three webinars leading up to the planting season. That's correct. The first one will be on Saturday the 3rd, and it is all on genetics. And it's not just me. We're going to have some other industry experts join us. We have Ben Brimlow from IND Hemp will join us, and we're going to discuss the current state of industrial hemp genetics. We are going to have Reggie Weedman, who is a hemp breeder and geneticist who is familiar with Southern Latitudes, and we're going to talk about and I know it's not so important for Midwest Hemp Council, but you guys do have a national presence, whether you realize
sure,
it or not.
Sure.
So some of the people in the Southern Latitudes, we're going to talk about the influence of Southern Latitudes on plant expression. And then we're also bringing on John Bays, who is traditionally he is more of a THC breeder. But we did a program that was hemp specific last year, which is a donation program to the Dalai Lama and the Dalai Lama's library. And that strain, that variety is called Bhutan Glory. And so he's going to come on for 5 minutes and talk about that. Should be a very fun event on Saturday the 3rd, if anybody wants to attend. And you can sign up right on our website at davishempfarms.com. Second one on the 30th April, again, a good topic for a lot of farmers is field nutrition and field management. We see a lot of farmers, throw an N at the crop too long. It's just a unique crop. It has some nuances of how you need it to set flower and trigger. So we're going to go through some of those components. And we're going to bring on some people that work in nutrition development and cultivation of field management. And we're going to try and get a buddy of ours who does integrated pest management to come on as well. Last one, I'm sorry for being long-winded, Jason.
No, by all means.
The last one on 515 is Know Your End Market. And this is a lot of the problem that we see is farmers get excited to plant without really knowing where their offtake is and what they're growing for. This crop is a pretty diverse crop, as we've touched on, you know, CBD isolates, broad spectrum distillates, smokable flower market, you know. So we're going to talk a little bit about knowing your in market. We're going to bring a processor on that we trust, to talk about it. We're going to bring ideally a retailer on who has brick and mortar and moves a lot of retail CBD products to talk. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the idea being, Jason, just give the farmers the tools that they need to have a successful crop and create a sustainable industry.
Well, I'm glad you went in depth on those the explanations of that, because I think there's a lot of things there that would trick or trip people to want to go do this or check out that webinar. A lot of interesting topics there, and some people that, you know, covering topics that people need to know about. So that's I'm glad you went into the detail on that. And again, this is this kicks off April 3rd, so that's next week. People need to get to the website and get signed up for that, and that's davishempfarms.com, correct?
Yes, and I should add, is fair or unfair, Jason, we cap the attendance to 200 on these webinars, mm-hmm. because we like to engage with everybody, and mm-hmm. sometimes it just becomes a little too intense to engage if you have more than a couple hundred.
Sure.
And on the first one, we do sell these out. We sold them out last year. We'll sell them out again this year. So if you guys cannot sell them out, they're free webinar, but we'll reach capacity. So if you guys want to get in there and be able to Q&A, please, sign up. However, these will be available. They'll go right onto our YouTube channel afterwards, just like our last year's webinars, and they'll be accessible to anybody anytime.
And folks can watch last year's webinar then as well.
That's correct. And there was a three webinar series last year. And again, you can find our podcast, which I think is very valuable mm-hmm. as well. Jason, you did a great job last year.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much on that, Jeremy. And again, I highly encourage folks to check out davishempfarms.com, because as you just said, there's a lot of resource on there. Even though you guys are out in Oregon, we're here in the Midwest, doesn't matter. So we certainly encourage folks to go check that out. And that's why we wanted to get you on the program today, Jeremy, because, Davis Hemp Farms, you guys have so much information and knowledge to offer. And we always appreciate talking to you and getting you on the program.
Thank you. Anytime, Jason. I don't know if you realize it, but Midwest Hemp Council has been an incredible resource for people around the nation. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate you. It's funny being out here in Oregon, but there are just a few around the nation, and you guys being one of them. So thank you for your support and for helping all the farmers in your region as well as around the nation.
Well, we have to tip the hat to Jamie Campbell Petty and Justin Swanson with the Midwest Hemp Council for leading that charge, because without those folks, I'm not sure that Midwest Hemp Council would have the presence that it does have. But Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else that we need to go or hit on that we have not touched on today?
I don't think so. I just want to say I appreciate you guys again very much, and Jamie. It's a wonderful, wonderful mm-hmm. resource you guys have been for hemp farmers, and that's what we all want to be. We just want to help this industry to succeed.
All right. Well, as the world opens back up again post-COVID, hopefully we'll see you here in the Midwest soon, Jeremy. We've got a lot of events coming up, and I know you guys do too. So, again, hopefully we'll cross paths here soon and be able to shake hands like real people.
I look forward to the day. Thank you so much, Jason.
All right, Jeremy. You have a good one, and take care.
All right, you take care. Thank you.
All right, and that's going to do it for our show this week. This week's podcast is brought to you by Davis Hemp Farms. You can find more information about Davis Hemp Farms at davishempfarms.com. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next time. So long, everybody.